And now, the moment of truth, tasting and judgment. On the panel today are actress Yumi Adachi, actress Naomi Hosokawa, actress Yoko Akino, and culinary critic Asako Kishi. First, the dishes of Challenger Kondo.
So good. Yeah. It's so good. Everything in here has a different texture. You have a chunky, slippery texture and jelly-like items in this. The flavors are all different, too. That accentuates a natural sweetness in my mouth.
I hope while you're eating this, you get a sense of the breeze from the coast of Kamakura.
Just smelling it, it's really pleasing. This takes me straight back to my childhood.
And now the dishes of Iron Chef Sakai are before the panel.
You're the one giving me hard themes.
When I was watching him make the sauce, I was wondering how it would taste. But it's so good.
And the sauce is, how should I say, elegantly hot, perhaps. The taste is different with the sauce.
The reason why I don't go for French so often is the cream sauce. But this one here is a bit different. I'm enjoying this cream sauce very much. It's like jelly, and it wobbles in my mouth.
Girls Festival, the theme. Women's Festival, the verdict. Which man measures up best?
Did you think that I would disappear? Did you think that I would wash away? Did you think that I would last this long? Did you think that I would get this strong?
Every time they try to make me change, they just wear me down.
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. My name is Phil, and I'm your host today as we explore fried food. I know those are dirty words in some circles, fried food. Cardiologists say stay away from it, Weight Watchers say stay away from it. You know, everything in moderation, you know, everything, moderation. And what I have to share with you really is the least oily way to enjoy fried food. And seriously, you know, it retains the crunch, which is really the main goal here. And I wouldn't recommend eating fried food if I couldn't provide the healthiest way to do it. So, more on that later. I've said this before, that every time I release a new show, no matter if it's a day or two later, something really big breaks. And then I've got to wait like a couple weeks before I can talk about it because, you know, I only do the show a couple times a month. I mean, it's a podcast, you know, it's a hobby, it's not my job. Anyway, the story is usually something that is like a big breakthrough food issue, or maybe I meet somebody new and it's kind of a big deal, I want to talk about it, or like when Obama named the new FDA head just a day after I released my show and I had to wait 2 weeks to talk about it. This time it's a little bit different. Here I am, I'm riding really high after the show on a FOF, Simply Heaven, that whole thing. Things are going really great. Next morning, I'm having my coffee, getting ready for work. And this happens.
I'm Michelle Bonner with breaking news into the ESPN newsroom this afternoon. And the Los Angeles Times is reporting that Dodgers outfielder Manny Ramirez will be suspended for 50 games after testing positive for performance-enhancing drugs.
I mean, son of a bitch. There goes summer. And then the I told you so start in. You know, anybody who knows me, who knows the show, knows that I'm like a really diehard Dodger fan. I've been one all my life, since I was old enough to crawl and drop loads in my diaper. You know, I spent my youth living closer to Los Angeles than Orange County. But in my adult life, I've lived a stone's throw away from Anaheim. But I root for the Dodgers because it's in my blood. And now we know it's in Manny's blood. And I know this isn't food related, but it's meme related. Seriously, that made me lose my appetite for everything and anything for a while. Friends of mine who are Red Sox fans, but when we were trying to sign him, they said, don't do it. You don't want him. Trust me, he's going to be trouble. He's going to screw you over sooner or later. And, well, the screwing begins now. Anyway, on to the food. I know that may be the title of the show, and the pictures of the plate of fried scallops, shrimp, and calamari was maybe a bit of a shock to you. I'm always going on and on about eating healthy. You know, that's my big thing, eating healthy. But, you know, sometimes you just got to give in to your urges. I mean, who doesn't like fried stuff? Fried chicken, fish and chips, french fries, chicken wings. You know, now and again, you just got to splurge a little bit. Have fun. So I wanted to do something fried. And Joe, at my last bite, had just the thing I needed. It's this stuff called Trisol. And it comes from Farron Adria's Surprises line of food additives. It's basically wheat starch. And you mix it with all-purpose flour. And then you cover what you want to fry in it, and you dip it in hot oil. And that's it. And what you end up with is super crispy outer layer of crust that doesn't hold in a lot of the oil, and it stays crispy for extended periods of time. You know, if you've ever fried like a bunch of fried chicken or anything, if you're having a party, you have to fry it in batches. And the stuff that you fry first stays around for like a half an hour or so. It starts to get soft because the oil starts to get into the flour and makes it soft. Then it gets oily and greasy. Well, this doesn't do that. You know, the fried chicken you have that has really greasy and kind of soft, it doesn't retain the initial crunch that it had when it came out of the oil. The wheat starch in Trisol keeps the crunch for well over half an hour and, kind of like gets rid of that oily stuff. It doesn't retain all the oil. It just kind of like rolls off of it. It's a miracle. And Joe wrote about it on her blog. I was going to blog about it, but she did such a fantastic job. I said, oh, screw it. I'll just send you over there. I swear to you, I've never had a better fish fry in my life, and I've had quite a few of them. This topped it. It was just phenomenal how great this was. Now let's get to how you can do this the healthiest way possible, because let's be honest. It's fried food, man. Don't be a jackass. If you're really worried about eating healthy and whether or not this is bad for you, don't eat fried food, dude. Boil it, bake it, saute it, grill it. Don't fry it. I mean, no matter how you slice it, fried food is bad for you. But there are things that you should fry food in, and then there are things that you should not. Lard and butter are a bad idea to fry in because they're really high in saturated fats. And another thing to stay away from are blended vegetable oils. Anything that contains coconut or palm oil, read the label. Don't buy that. And really, the best oils to use when you fry are pure vegetable oils. Sunflower, corn, safflower, or peanut oil. Those are the ones that are good. I know a lot of people might say, you know, why not use olive oil? It's the most nutritious and we use it for sauteing. That's true, but olive oil breaks down at high temperatures. And if you're going to fry, it has to be, you know, above 300 degrees. That breaks the olive oil down. And smoking temperature is really important when frying, so you have to pay attention. That's why pure vegetable oil works best. It has a higher smoking point. If your oil has smoke or haze rising from it, that's going to be a little too hot and it's going to start to break down, and that makes it indigestible and ends up hurting your body. Sunflower and corn oil have the highest smoking temperatures, so I suggest using them before you try anything else. I happen to like to use peanut oil, an unrefined peanut oil if I can get that. In fact, when I make my palm frites, that's French fries when you're having them with a hamburger, it's palm frites when you're accompanying a flat iron steak. French. I'll only use peanut oil when I'm doing that. When I'm making French fries, palm frites. It's got a really high smoking point, and it's a real heavy hitter when it comes to flavor. And I can't remember which episode it was. Maybe Chicago. But this was over the top. Bourdain walks into this hot dog place. They make gourmet dogs. There were dogs, you know, topped with foie gras, venison dogs, all sorts of stuff like that. Anyway, all their fries that they make were fried in duck fat. Duck fat. Do you imagine how rich that must be? Fries in duck fat. Anyway, that's the tip on oil. Corn, sunflower, safflower, or peanut. Just make sure it's 100% vegetable oil. So with Tresol, the key really is to get a balance. You can use one part Tresol to one part all-purpose flour. That'll give you a really massive crunch. Massive. I mean, not like it's going to bust your teeth, but really crispy. Now, Jo really did it up. She did such a great job. She tried all sorts of variations, you know, different combinations, you know, one part, two parts, three parts. I said, if you're really interested in a whole in-depth study of it, mylastbite.com, this whole thing on Tresol. I did one part Tresol to two parts all-purpose flour, and it was just perfect. I dipped my bay scallops, my shrimp, and calamari rings in the flour mixture until it was really well covered, and then knocked off the excess, heated up my peanut oil to 350 degrees, and started my fish fry. And let me tell you something, kids. This was knock it out of the park. Seriously, it was that good. No additional flavors from Tresol. You can't taste anything different. It's just whatever you're frying with this massive, crunchy exterior. And I turned into like a ravaged animal, man. I mean, seriously, I just started eating the stuff by the handful. I was stuffing my face. And before I knew it, I'd knocked back an entire pound of seafood. This massive cloud of guilt comes over me. The next day, I'm on my bike. I'm doing push-ups, sit-ups, weights. I was doing laps in the pool. I knew I had to pay for it, but man, it was just so worth it. And the Tresol's mail order only. It's not like you can go in the store and buy this stuff, and I don't think it's very cheap. But if you're interested in it, and if you're interested in trying it, go to Jo's site, mylastbite.com, and follow her links to the Audrea Brothers website, and you can purchase it yourself. It comes in a 4-pound tub, and it should last you well into your third bypass surgery, so you don't have to worry about running out anytime soon. So the question is, what the hell would go with fried food? What beer would go with fried food? Because you got to know a beer is involved, right? Indeed it is. And I had a very tall bottle of it. And it's only fitting that the beer that I chose to pair with this has Farinandria's stamp on it. It's something very unique, and I wanted to welcome beer back on my show in true style. Inedit is a beer made by Dom, a Spanish brewery. And it's the first beer specifically created to accompany food. The very first beer strictly just to be paired with food. It was created by the brewmasters at Dom and by Farinandria and Juli Soler and El Bulli's sommelier team. You know, the guys that, you know, designed their wine menu. They all worked together and they designed this beer. So I had Dom's Estrella, the lager, when we visited the bazaar, and it was a lager, just as I expected. It was a Spanish beer, yellow, and you kind of know what's coming when you order a beer like that. But this isn't like that at all. This beer, the Inedit, I'll be totally honest with you, it's a wit beer. It is a Spanish wit beer. It's as close as you can come to a bitter Belgian wit without actually calling yourself a Belgian wit. And I tried the beer really cold, and it tasted great. Then I let it warm up a little bit to room temperature. And all those bubblegum flavors and the sour lemon flavors, they came really kind of intense as it warmed up. So for the show's sake, I'm going to try another one, a really super cold. And I'm going to have it. I already cracked it earlier and poured it in a nice little glass here. Yeah, baby. That is very refreshing. Lemony. I mean, seriously, like, I know they didn't put lemons in this, but it sure tastes like it does. They have licorice. They have all the spices, coriander, orange peel, all that stuff that you would find in a wit, and a very special strain of yeast, which I'm sure they're not going to share with anybody. And there's tons of spice in it, but it's not overwhelming. And I found this beer a while back, and I had it before I would try to pair anything with it. And I'll be honest with you, the first time I had it, I had a severe case of what the fuck for about an hour. I was like, what in the hell am I going to do with this? I even emailed Sean Paxton, the homebrew chef, who I think now, wouldn't it just be safe to call Sean Paxton homebrew Jesus from now on? Is that all right? Can we do that? Because, I mean, he's reached that status. Anyway, I asked him if he'd heard of this, and if he had, what would he pair with it? Because if anyone would know, Paxton's going to know. And he had not heard of it, but was going to look into it. But anyway, I think this pairs really nicely with fried food. Little fried food, cut through the fried food with a little Spanish wit beer. That sounds really wrong. Spanish wit beer. It's what it is, man. It's made in Spain. It's a wit. And it's a winner. I give it about 4.5 out of 5 stars.
It's the Onion Radio News. U.S. fast food chains agree to voluntary cheese limits. This is Doyle Redland reporting. Fearful of the prospect of class action lawsuits, seven of the nation's largest fast food chains voluntarily agreed today to place cheese limits on their own sandwich items. McDonald's, Burger King, and five other leading chains will now abide by a new self-imposed, quote, 3-ounce rule, Burger King CEO Henry Tarment.
It was only a matter of time before that BK triple cheddar stack caught up to his big time. Three juicy beef patties and four big cheddar slices wasn't just a recipe for a great burger, it was a recipe for disaster.
Hardee's is refusing to go along with the restrictions, however, claiming the integrity of their monster burger would be severely compromised. Doyle Redlin for The Onion Radio News, online at theonion.com.
Hey, so Michael Pollan was on the Colbert Report last week, and it was pretty damn funny. You know Pollan. He wrote Omnivore's Dilemma, In Defense of Food. He's kind of a serious food writer. And kind of a hero to you know, people like me who are just kind of interested in food issues and farmers' rights. And Colbert loves to screw around with people anyway. It's kind of funny. And he's having fun with Pollan on defending food and why it's not okay to eat just anything.
How's it going there, Michael? Good to see you again.
Good to be back.
All right. Now listen. This is called In Defense of Food, an Eater's Manifesto. Why should you be in defense of food? I thought all you food writers kept on saying that what we eat is killing us. Shouldn't we be attacking the food to protect ourselves?
Food needs to be defended against the food industry, which is, you know, processing it and making it synthetic.
What's wrong with processing food? The last time I checked, American cheese was processed.
Yeah,
are you against American things? Sounds like it.
American cheddar cheese, I'm a big fan of. But have you seen what's in processed American cheese?
No, because
cheese
I enjoy eating it. Why do you want to, undream the dream, as it were? Why would you want to do that?
Read the ingredient label sometime. You'll be...
I don't have that much time.
All right.
I'm a busy, busy man. It'll be quicker to read your book.
Probably.
So what do you think we should be doing? I mean, what's wrong? You say
simple.
We make food fake, right?
Yeah. Well,
what's wrong with fake food? We start with fake food, you know? Put away your breast. Give the baby formula.
Well, there's a great example. We have been trying to synthesize breast milk for 150 years, and we still don't know how to do it. And babies on formula don't do as well as babies on breast milk, and we don't know why.
Were you breastfed?
I don't know. My mom's here. I don't. We could ask her.
Was he breastfed? No.
No.
No. I demand you apologize to your mother. Apologize to your mother, sir.
It was great.
Yes. That is amazing.
But that's where it begins. We were synthesizing food. Mm-hmm. All the way through. Mm-hmm. And we don't know enough about food. What we know about is that there's certain plants and animals and fungi that we co-evolved with. Our bodies know what to do with it, gets the nutrition we need. And but for instance, our bodies knows what to do with corn, right? It doesn't know what
to do with
fry it, boil it. There's a whole lot you can do with it. Put it in soda.
This whole set is made of corn right
now.
But
the point is,
you can bite this. It tastes like a Sun Chip.
I'll try it. But our bodies don't know what to do with high fructose corn syrup that is made from corn. It's just,
it's
the difference
though.
Between coca leaves delicious. And crack.
Are you suggesting that, there's crack in my drink?
It's the same basic principle. It's the reduction of this complex food to one simple ingredient that overwhelms our bodies and leads to all the problems that you're having, drinking all the soda.
But I'm not...
I'm having the problem of
deliciousness right now. But food science, you don't like food science? I thought you're like you use science in your books.
I do use science.
Why can't we use science on our foods? I mean, have you seen what science has done for Cheetos lately? They've got those
big ones.
You see the big ones?
I've seen the big ones.
It comes with like an air cannon and they shoot it at your mouth. It's fantastic. Why would you want to do that? That's fun. And as we know, if it's fun, it can't be bad for you.
Well, okay, once a week. Have those Cheetos. Just don't have it every day.
What about your own family? What if you got a son, right?
Yeah, I have a son.
What if he goes cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs? Would you get him the Cocoa Puffs?
I have. In fact, I was busted once in a supermarket in Berkeley. Someone tapped on my shoulder just as I was reaching for the Fruity Pebbles and said, "I'm watching Michael Pollan shop for groceries." And I haven't been back to that store.
Wow. In
so
Berkeley, that's a capital crime.
Yeah, in Berkeley, it is a capital crime. So my son, you know, had his weekend cereal when he was younger. And, you know, just, I mean, look, I grew up on this stuff. I had yodels after school, you know.
What should I be eating? Like, when I go home tonight, what should I have?
You know, anything that's real. Anything that has less than 5 ingredients in it. And anything you cook yourself. You really can't go wrong cooking for yourself.
So as long as I cook for myself, yeah. I'm in pretty good shape.
That, making that one change in your diet would do so much for your health.
I just want to make sure.
And deal with the pasty complexion. And
you notice I
you've had 30
wavy
sodas.
Hair, Mr. Ballin. This is what high fructose corn syrup gets you. Physician, heal myself. Michael Ballin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Steven. The book is
In Defense of Food. We'll be right back.
You know, this gets back to what I was talking about a while back. It's hard to make these arguments to stay away from fast food, junk food, cookies, crap. You know, when sooner or later, you're going to break down yourself. And hopefully, there's not going to be someone there to see it. And I don't care if it's your son or not. You know, buying Cocoa Pebbles. And it's hard to live the life of a food saint because when you get busted, man, it pays. It costs you. Sooner or later, you're going to be in a position where fresh is not available to you. It's not an option. You're on the road. There's no stove. There's no cookware. There's no fancy restaurants. There's no salad bar. You have to buckle down and eat a Big Mac and fries because that's all that's here now, and we have to get back on the road and get going. And you have to eat, and you're going to eat that. And hopefully there's not going to be some sandal-wearing tree-hugger hippie waiting to knock you out when he sees you buying it. But so I feel for Poland in that situation. Really, I do. I mean, give the man a break. And while we're on the subject, you know something? There's some real bitchy, crabby, unhappy people out there. Excuse my language for a second here, all right? I'm a bit miffed about something. I'm a bit pissed off. And the more I've sat on it, the more pissed off I've become. So I just need to talk about it. I got my first piece of negative feedback on my site not long ago. And it came from this guy or this girl claimed that real chefs or people who are in the business, they look down on molecular gastronomy and those who dabble in molecular gastronomy. Below me. He or she said that not only was it bad practice, as only real chefs would concentrate on classic methods to cook food, but that the food was inedible, that the ingredients made the food inedible. So Joe and a few others came to my defense. I want to thank you for that. I appreciate it. It's good to know that I have people in my corner. But these arguments are lame, and they don't really hold any water. They hold zero water, actually. Not only was this argument rehashed, because I've heard it about 100 times now, and I've only been involved in this for a few months, but it's not true. I use classic methods in my kitchen all the time, all right? Come try my roast chicken. I make duck confit. Anything I cook on the grill. My vegetables, sautéed just like Julia Child taught me in her books. My sauces, reductions, my pastries. All right, maybe we won't go there. Anyway, I can cook, man. I do just fine. But this is fun. I mean, this is more fun than baking a chicken. This is more fun than making puff pastry or something. I mean, this is artistry, trickery. It's magic. It's fun. I mean, do you get that? That is fun? Isn't that the point? Isn't that why we're in the kitchen, to have fun? Now, maybe you're in there to show off and jack off with your knife skills, show all your loser friends, you know, how great you are when you dice an onion. Good for you. But not for me. I need more than that. I need another avenue. I like to do things that are different. And this food is not inedible. It doesn't taste inedible. I mean, why do you think it's inedible? Because we use things with weird names, weird ingredients? Alginate, agar, agar. Soy lecithin, gelatin, Supertex 3, calcium chloride. Supertex 3 sounds like a condom. All those ingredients that I list, every one of them, all natural elements. And most of them are derivatives of things that you find in the sea. And since when are things in the sea inedible? Algae, seaweed, soy lecithin, salt, calcium chloride. You know what that is? That's salt, dickface. Get your head out of your ass before you post shit like that on someone's blog. No offense, don't mean to rain on your parade. Whatever floats your boat. That's what he wrote. You want to know what floats my boat? People who aren't afraid to embrace something new. That's what floats my boat. Missionary position just wasn't doing it for me anymore. Okay? Afraid I had to try something else. Sorry that doesn't seem edible to you. Maybe you should try cooking doggy style one of these days, dude. You'll discover maybe you like it too. How does it always turn into a sexual position? I need help. But here's where I stand on this, without being too dramatic, because I'm being a drama queen anyway. In a nutshell, molecular cooking allows me, a home cook, to make dishes by using additives that I, you know, give to food that are derived from natural elements to alter the appearance of fresh food items like vegetables and fruit, because for the most part, that's all I've done so far, vegetables and fruit. The idea of this is to trick the person that I'm serving the food into believing that they're about to eat one thing, but I'm serving them something else. And the exercise is designed to change the way we perceive food, to stop eating with our eyes and rely on other senses. And I didn't make this up. These are Farron Audria's words. He said, why is it that we only eat breakfast, like bacon and eggs, in the morning? Why can't we have it at night? Now, why can't we have cappuccino at night, only in the morning? Like the Italians are real big on this. They come out here from Italy, and they see us with the meat and the pasta on the same plate. Drives them nuts. No, no, pasta first. Meat's a second course. Cappuccino after 11 in the morning? No, 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 no. Only cappuccino, have it in the morning. Don't have that at night. Why? I think if we can break these bonds that we've created, if we can do this to food, it serves to help us break down other more important barriers in our lives, like race, religion, sexual orientation. If we stop looking at everything with these goddamn blinders that we wear all the time, our entire life we go through life with blinders on. It's got to be one way. And maybe we'll unlock our heads just a little bit and realize that, you know, maybe this guy's all right. I really like him. You know, I want to see him again. I love that dude. What? He's black? Oh, he's gay too? I didn't even notice. You know what I mean? The mango egg. The cheese cups with wine caviar. I'm making cucumber spaghetti next. It's fun. It's fun with food. Exploring new techniques. Keeping it fresh. It's exactly what the title of my show and my blog means. That's why I do what I do. That's why I love to do what I do. It's a constant journey to discover new things, new flavors, new challenges, new techniques in the kitchen. I mean, sure, just as some home cooks, it's important to master the basics. I mean, you don't go pick up golf and start playing Pebble Beach immediately and then get pissed off when you're nine holes into your round, you lost three sleeves of balls, your score's in the 70s. I mean, you got to take baby steps. I mean, don't be stupid. You'll get there. But I've been cooking for a long time. And yeah, there are some things I just don't do well with in the kitchen, like baking. But I'm getting the hang of it. And while I'm doing that, I want to do something else. I'm going to get the hang of this too. So get off my leg.
Whenever Joe Ratner is hungry, he refuses to eat any food that isn't fully engulfed in flames at the time that it is served. Crepe Suzette, souvlaki cheese, or anything that can be soaked in brandy and ignited make up nearly all of Ratner's diet.
People really need to experiment more with fire. Have you ever had Cheetos flambé? Out of this world.
When out dining with friends at Denny's, Ratner brings along a flask of tequila to set up a good flame on his lumberjack slam. Doyle Redland for The Onion Radio News.
Joe did it. The boys at Should I Drink That did it. I wanted to say something. Dom DeLuise, he passed away a couple weeks ago. Kind of bummed me out a little bit. I've got his cookbooks. He made a couple cookbooks called Eat This, It'll Make You Feel Better. And they're really great. In those books, he's got marinara recipe from his grandmother, all these old school Italian recipes, that soups and stuff like that, that are basically genuinely designed to make you feel, you know, better if you're not feeling well. And they're pretty healthy because they use all natural ingredients, but just really old school Italian-American stuff. And it kind of reminded me of my grandmother a little bit. I used to watch Fatso, this movie he did with my mom. And we watched it so many times, but my mom would laugh at the same things every time, like she had never seen it before. And it was kind of great to have that connection. So he was fantastic. And what got me about this is that when you see someone like him pass away, I think he was 72 years old, and he had cancer, I think. You're watching basically the connection of first and second generation Italians and Sicilians, and any European, really. And when they pass, it kind of shocks you into the reality that that is becoming the old world more and more because we're losing our connection with it when generations like that pass. And it was funny, too. Katrina's cousin is Dick Cavett. And whenever we spend time with Dick, I mean, that man, he name drops like a B-14 drops bombs. I mean, DeLuise was just like that. Dom DeLuise loved show business. He loved being in it. He loved being able to mention all the showbiz friends that he had and include their recipes in his book and pictures and stuff. And Cavett once, and this is funny, we're sitting in his mother's apartment, and he's spending like the last hour we're doing stuff. He's just telling me story after story after story about the time he interviewed John Lennon, how he met Groucho Marx. He's best friends and takes walks every week with Woody Allen. And so I asked him some question about Johnny Carson, I think, because I was just curious. And he starts telling me the story, and he stops mid-sentence and says, "Now listen, I don't like to name drop, but..." And I'm like, "Oh, no, you don't, huh?" "Not you, Dick. You don't name drop at all. Never." But DeLuise was just like that. He was very lovable, and he loved knowing who he knew. He loved being who he was. He loved being in the kitchen. And he made my mom laugh, which is really all I could ask for back then. So I kind of owed him for that. So it was sad to see him go. Hey, listen, I got a new thing coming, a new site design, a new logo that we've put together to ramp ourselves up for season 3 of My Life as a Foodie. Next episode will be coming June 10th, and that's going to celebrate the show's 2-year anniversary and start season 3 of My Life as a Foodie. I know a lot of podcasts don't like to make a big deal out of it, because last year, my first anniversary came and went, and I was like, you know, I think I was in shock that it lasted a year, but it means a lot more to me now. I think it's a big deal now because I put so much time and effort into the show. I mean, all my off time is kind of spent working on it, thinking about it, and I do really like to do it, so I try to make the show as interesting as I can, and try to keep you coming back. And maybe I fail to do that at times. It's not for a lack of trying. But I checked my stats, which were not very good last year, but they seem to be getting a lot better. I'm averaging between 600 and 800 bona fide downloads, full downloads per show. And the Molecular Cooking Show was 1,100 downloads so far. So that's a pretty big deal. But just want to let you know that more stuff is coming. The show is going to get a little bit grittier. The music, the language, and the food. I'm bringing beer back, of course, as you've seen. And it's now just going to be basically a pairing mechanism. So if we're having something on the show, I'll pair it with a beer. And another one of the segments I want to do from time to time is called Eat This Before It Eats You, where we're going to be cooking and eating animals that are potential man killers. So I don't know how many are actually available for sale, what's legal to eat that would actually eat a person. But if they're around, I'm going to buy them, and I'm going to eat their ass. And their liver. But that's coming starting June 10th, season 3 of My Life as a Foodie. We're going to have a big show. I've got something planned with my other podcasting friends at The Beer Safari, beersafari.com at the Jungle of Beer. So set your calendars for June 10th if you dare. And episode 39 will be the start of some new stuff. My wife does something really funny now. I wanted to talk about this. I'm not sure what magazine it is. I think it's Food Network magazine. In fact, I'm almost positive. But anything that Paula Deen is on the cover of, with her bleached hair and the forced smile smeared on her face, every time we're in a store, and it doesn't matter where it is, bookstore, Costco, grocery store, if she sees that magazine with Dean's mug on the cover, she turns it over. And that way she doesn't have to look at it, and I don't have to look at it, and nobody really has to look at it. The first time she did it, I was mildly amused. But now she does it all the time, and it gets funnier and funnier because I don't even know when she's doing it. We were checking out at Lowe's last weekend, you know, Lowe's, the home improvement store, and I wasn't paying attention. You know, we get to the magazine rack right at the checkout stand, and I'm looking around and look at the rack, and there's this big picture of Bobby Flay. I go, "What the hell is that?" It's unmistakable. You know Bobby Flay, big stupid face. And so I look closer, and it's an advertisement for his show, Grill It. And I'm like, "What the hell is that on a magazine?" And then I realized Katrina had turned the magazine over at some point while we were in the store, and I look at her, and she's got this look on her face. And it might not be funny to everybody, but it sure as hell is funny to me. And I think it's great that we have this unspoken dislike for Paula Deen's sugar-coated image. She does not seem like a real person to me, really. And I understand her story, and I appreciate it, but her food is going to kill people sooner or later. I don't understand why she's famous. But then again, you know, I don't get the Food Network anymore. It's entertaining, but I don't get it. But to each his own. If you like it, you like it. There was an interesting article in The Atlantic recently that asked the question, does race matter for sushi chefs? Sushi chefs. That's not an easy thing to say in half drunk. I wanted to discuss it with you because I thought it was an interesting question, really. I mean, say you walk into a sushi bar in America, all right, anywhere here in America, and you're looking for authentic Japanese food, and you're faced with two empty seats at the sushi bar. There's an empty seat in front of a chef, looks Japanese, and then there's another empty seat in front of a chef who has blonde hair and freckles. Where are you going to sit? I mean, what if the choice was between a chef who looks Japanese and then one who's an African-American? Trevor Corson wrote this article, and I found that it made some sense. And I really never thought about it, or I didn't even think to question it, but it's true. I mean, I'm sure you've seen Bourdain visit Japan on more than one occasion. Every time he goes, eats sushi. And any other show where the host visits Japan, they eat sushi. In the majority of these cases, save for a few actual bars, like the one Tony visited in Hanshin with the baseball fans everywhere, that place was loaded with rabid Tiger fans, and the sushi chefs were wildly animated. It was, you know, really a raucous bar. But for the most part, no. It's a quiet, serious place to eat. And I wonder, for as good as the fish might be, is it as enjoyable when the sushi chef is not friendly and doesn't speak to you? So on that case, I mean, when you're in America, you've got sushi chefs who are a lot friendlier. In Japan, it seems to be a bit more serious. Now, I've never been to Japan, so I can't speak firsthand, but I have had my fair share of sushi in the United States. I think I've eaten at least 40 different sushi bars throughout the country. I've been all over the place. I've eaten a lot of raw fish. I mean, sushi is my thing. And the more offbeat the things that they can serve, the better. I've been to family buffet-style sushi places, which, I have to tell you, are terrible places to eat sushi. And I've been to really upscale, serious places, too. Don took me to this place once, in this unassuming strip mall. It was called Wasabi, which is almost a tacky name for a place anyway. But you walk in, this place is super small, four tables and a small bar where you sit. And the owner buys his fish fresh every morning. And if he can't get what he wants, he's not open that day. And if he's out of fish, when he's out of fish, he's closed. It's the kind of place where you go and you don't get California rolls. In fact, there's a sign on the wall that says, "We don't serve rolls, don't ask." You get in there, you sit at the bar, you don't order, he serves you and you shut up. Don't ask for wasabi. Don't ask for anything. If he thinks the dish needs wasabi or ginger, he'll add it. And I felt like I was in sushi school. It was uncomfortable not knowing if I was going to fuck up, you know, eat something the wrong way, insult this guy. I almost drank the water you're supposed to use to wash your hands in. I didn't know. I mean, the food was impeccable, delicious. I never had sushi fresher than that or prepared the way he prepared it. And it was expensive, too. Maron. I'm glad I wasn't paying. But experience-wise, I always tend to try to go to places where the chefs, even if they're not really Japanese, at least look Japanese. And they're a little cocky, little talkative. They screw around a lot. I want to engage them without having to speak Japanese, of course. And when you go to sushi restaurants, there are two kinds of people. There are people who sit at the bar and order from the chefs directly. They watch them prepare it. They get the chefs drunk. They buy them drinks all night. And then there are those who just want to be left alone. They get in. They go sit at a table far away from the bar. They order off the menu, and they have the sushi brought to the table. I'm the first kind. I like the action. I like to watch them slice the fish. I was in one place a long time ago, back in college. I don't remember even how long ago that was, but it was a while back. You could order an entire fish, a mackerel. They pulled this damn thing out of a tank, whacked it on the head, killed it, skinned it, then carved multiple slices in the body of this thing and served it to you. It was warm. I mean, that's fresh freaking sushi. I don't think you can even do that here anymore because the health department just goes nuts. But all I know is I never would have gotten that experience. And I never would have had that kind of, you know, feeling about sushi if I sat at a table and ordered off a menu and if it hadn't have been in a place that at least seemed a bit authentically Japanese. But anyway, that's the show. That is Kentucky Fried Foodie. Don't forget to check out Joe's blog if you're interested in Trisal, mylastbite.com. And don't forget to check in next time for the beginning of our third season. June 10th is our second anniversary, start of season 3, My Life as a Foodie. And I have something cool planned for all of you if all goes well. Thanks to Comedy Central and TheOnion.com for the audio clips. Music in this episode from Filter. If you like it, go to MyLifeAsAFoodie.com, click the link in the episode show notes, and you can download it from iTunes for 99 cents. Until next time, my name is Phil, and this has been My Life as a Foodie. Salud.